I think we could just say wow this morning, right? Already from the worship and just that video that's there. Well, I'm Ernest. I'm the missions pastor here at Bethany, and this is one of the special times of the year for my ministry, for my calling, and it's our missions month. We have been doing our missions conference in September. This year we moved it to February, and we're knowing that God is just going to bless us during that time. I would like to, first of all, tell you about this little book that's on the table in the lobby. If you haven't already picked it up, I'd like to encourage you to pick one up. Tomorrow, we are starting a 21-day prayer challenge. Okay? We are praying for our Global Impact Celebration, for all the missionaries who will be with us during that time, for the organizations that we sponsor and that we support, and for just the work of God around the world. Let me encourage you to take this 21 days and make it your time of prayer. It is said that it takes 21 days to form a habit. So maybe you're not in the habit of praying, or you don't have a prayer life. Let me just tell you to take the challenge this for the next 21 days and say, I am going to pray every day. So get a time that you want to do it. Maybe it's the morning, maybe it's lunchtime. Maybe it's in the evening before you go to bed. But fix that time of the day and say, I'm going to pray every day during this time. And you don't have to go somewhere and, you know, just bow down on your knees and close your eyes and say those lofty prayers. It is a time just between you and the Lord. Now, this guide has every day has some requests that you can pray for. And you can take that and especially be praying for our missionaries. But it's not only that. It's a time for you to be praying about all the other things in your life. So use the guide and add those prayers to your own prayers. The very first day, which is tomorrow, it is a day of self-reflection. It is today to prepare yourself for those 21 days. So make it a challenge that you're going to do that tomorrow. You're going to start tomorrow with praying and pray for these next 21 days. We have a little wristband that's on the table, too, and it says good news, which is the theme for our month. But I have mine on. I have mine on right here, so I'm going to wear mine for these next 21 days. That will help me remember that, especially first of all, the good news, but to remember to pray, to remember to get closer to God during these 21 days, to make that a very special time. So as you leave out this morning, pick you up one of the books and pick you up a wristband, wear that. And if someone asks you, what is that wristband for? You'll be able to tell them that our church is this, during these next 21 days, we're doing a prayer challenge and we're all praying together as a church. We're coming together as one body to pray for these requests and to pray for our church, to pray for our pastors, to pray for each other so that God's name would be lifted up and the good news would be proclaimed. When I was thinking about a theme for this month, for this year's Global Impact Celebration, I'd heard a song, and it's by Wren Collective. We're going to sing it at the end of the service this morning. But it's called Good News or Rescuer. And as soon as I heard that, I thought how true that is for us today. Just like the video was saying, there is so much bad news in the world today. There is so much evil in the world today. If you had asked maybe a college student or, you know, maybe someone who's in their 20s or, you know, maybe early 30s, do you watch the news? Probably most of them will say no. They say, because I just can't stand to listen to it. I just can't stand to hear that news. And perhaps you're the same way. Sometimes for me, I'll watch the local news, but when the national news comes on, you know what I'll do? I'll change the channel or I'll just turn it off because it's so much bad news. There's so much affliction in this world today. There's so much sin in this world today. So many people who are in chains today, who are bound by addictions. There's addiction. There's so many kinds of addictions today. And people are just bound up in those addictions. And they're tied into those addictions. The people had been looking for a Messiah for many years. God had been silent between the Old Testament and the New Testament for about 400 years. But they were looking for this deliverer to come. They thought this deliverer was going to come and bring them deliverance from Rome, from the Roman Empire, and set up his kingdom here on this earth. Jesus came to the earth. Jesus was born as a baby. Jesus was born in a stable, in a lowly place. But Jesus was the King. When he was around 30 years old, he started his ministry, and he had his disciples. He called his disciples. He was with them for like 3 years, and he taught his disciples. They saw him raise the dead. They saw him walk on water. They saw him feed 5,000. They were part of that in handing people the food that just kept coming from Jesus. They saw all these things that Jesus was doing, and they thought, this is our King. This is our Messiah. Look at what he can do. He can even calm the winds and everything. But Jesus didn't come to be their earthly king. He came to be the king over their addictions. He came to be the king over their sin. He came to be their rescuer. In Luke chapter 4, Jesus was in the temple, and they gave him a scroll, and he opened the scroll, and he began to read these words, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Jesus came to set the captives free. Jesus came to set the poor free. Jesus came to set you and me free from our sins. Jesus came, the good news, he said, is here today. I bring you that good news. And then we read in Isaiah 52:7. It says, "How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation to Zion, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns." This morning I've asked Michelle Swofford to come give her testimony for us. Many of you might not even know Michelle. Michelle and her husband go to the second service. I'll just tell you how I met Michelle, and I don't remember meeting her the first time. You would think I would. If you meet Michelle, you would know that you would remember Michelle. But I met her at the first time when it was went to Anderson Elementary to be a test proctor there for one of their state testing. We were doing a Touch a Truck ministry here, and we were trying to reach out to all the PTAs around us. We had a meeting here at our church with the PTA leaders. Michelle came to that meeting. And she sat there in that meeting, and we were talking, and she was talking about our church, talking to Pastor Randy about our church and everything. And she said, "What would make this church even more perfect is if it was a Free Will Baptist church." And I said, "Well, that's exactly who we are." Randy said that. Randy told her, she thought we were kidding, But that's the first time that we met. And then she started coming, and her family, they've been coming to church with us since then, and most of the time go to the second service, so you might not see them in this service. But her testimony is something that I want you to hear today. Michelle was on a TV show called Intervention, and we didn't have the clips to show you this morning, but if you go and you watch that show, it was actually an A&E TV show called Intervention. Michelle was addicted to drugs. She's going to tell you her story. I don't want to tell her story. I just wanted to introduce you for this time here. Her life was just bad news. It was just bad. She's going to share a little bit with you this morning, and you will hear that. But she's a testimony this morning of the good news. How beautiful are the feet? How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news? I want you to listen to the good news that Michelle has this morning and hear her testimony and let God speak to your heart. Michelle. Well, come on up, Michelle. I don't know if I want you, Justin, come on up so they can see you. They can see the ending, here, your family. You have your boys here and little daughter. She's in the nursery.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So this is the family that you see now, the ending. Okay, of this, but we're so glad to have Michelle with us this morning to share her testimony. Let's give her a good welcome this morning. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Oh man, I am so nervous. My son passed me a little note. I just want to read it to you because it's precious. He made me a little banner and it says, "We're your biggest fans." And I just want you to know that means so much to me. I am terrified to speak in front of people. And when Ernest asked me to speak both services, I instantly wanted to run away in fear. And I had to convince myself, like, that's never worked out for anybody in the Bible. You know, ending up in the belly of a whale, wandering around for 40 years. One time I wandered around Walmart 45 minutes looking for something with three kids. That's enough to terrify anyone into obedience. So I'm here, and God has never let me down. He's not going to start today. So I'd like to get started. I was not raised in a Christian home. My mom always encouraged us to kind of create our own God. And being really little, that was not hard for me because I knew Santa. And I thought, hey, if this guy who doesn't know me wants to gift me like once a year, how much more would the loving God who created me want to gift me? Made sense. So one of the very first prayers I prayed as a little girl was for the baby alive doll, the Lexus of dolls in my day. Some of you know. And coming from low income and being very poor, I knew I would never be able to afford this doll. So I prayed. And I said, God, if you will put the doll underneath my bed, I won't look all night long. I could hardly sleep that night anticipating playing with this doll. And when I got up that next morning, the first thing I did was I went underneath my bed. And there was no doll. And I was devastated. But that disappointment didn't keep me from praying, because in the fourth grade, that's when it hit me that it took more than a stunning personality to be cool, to be liked. It took stuff like nice clothes and nice hair and perfect teeth, which I had none. And so I prayed. I said, God, please give me pretty teeth and nice hair and nice clothes. And at the end, I just prayed that kids would like me in spite of my circumstances. And even though those prayers seemed unheard, it did not keep me from praying, because in the sixth grade, I needed a God. My mom and dad, who were not married, they split up. In a matter of weeks, my dad was remarried. And in a matter of months, he got diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I prayed that God would let him live. And when he died, and through my mom's grief and shock, it left open a door for some really terrible things to start happening to me. And I prayed for God to make them stop. And when they didn't stop, I knew that the only way it was going to end as if I took my own life. So I tried a few light attempts to kill myself, and then it hit me. I was scared to die. But I knew that if I wanted it to end, that I was going to have to try to get someone to take my life. So I came up with this plan that I was going to dress kind of risky and walk down a very, like, dangerous road. And I did. I snuck out of my house. And I started walking down this road, dressed very risky. And I prayed the last prayer to the God that I created that could be whatever I needed and whatever I wanted. And I begged him to take my life. I said, if you love me at all, send somebody to kill me. Make it end. And as the sun came up and my legs were so tired, I knew God didn't exist. I was at what they call a jumping off point. I love this picture of this, because imagine you're on a tall building and you're looking down at what ultimately is going to be your death. And you're looking behind you at what ultimately is going to be living. And you're just standing there wondering what's worse. I want to pause here for a second because I want you to go somewhere with me. It's in the very beginning when God created Adam and Eve, and he created them to be in his very presence. I want you to think of a time when you felt the presence of God. Maybe you helped someone in need. Maybe you heard the right praise and worship at the right time. Maybe the day you knew you were forgiven for a multitude of sins, that euphoria, that high, I got goosebumps right now, that high of just a glimpse of who God is, and Adam and Eve were in his very presence. Can you imagine the high that they must have felt, and what sin has taken from us? And Satan has tried to counterfeit that high ever since, and he does it in all kinds of deceiving ways. He uses relationships, he uses sex, he uses social media, he uses drugs, he uses alcohol, he uses money. All kinds of ways. And for me, it was no different. He brought drugs into my life, and for the first time, I had instant relief. It had been everything I prayed for. It was my God. But just like anything counterfeit, it fades and it tarnishes and it shows its true colors, because I was willing to do more things that cause shame, and I was putting myself in worse situations that was causing more pain and more shame, and it was taking so much to just even survive. When intervention came and told me they would send me to San Diego, I thought, this is great. This rehab is in San Diego. It's a fancy rehab. It is going to get me sober. And I got there and I made friends with this girl, and we started using drugs together with this guy who was a bad dude. He had horrible intentions for me and my friend, and I didn't care. And so my first drug test that I failed, the doctor brought me in and he said, Michelle, I want to see you get sober, but for the safety of the rehab, if you use again, we're going to ask you to leave. Didn't faze me. I kept using drugs. But the night before I was going to take my next drug test, a light bulb went off that I was going to fail this drug test. And I was going to end up with this man. And I might not make it back. And I prayed, but not to the God that could be whatever I wanted and whatever I needed. I prayed this prayer. I said, I don't know if there's a God who can hear me, but don't send me with him. Provide another way. Don't give up on me. I got up and I failed that drug test. And the doctor, with a disappointing look on his face, I'll never forget, he said to me, I don't know why, but I'm going to give you another chance. But I don't want to hear any more words from you. You're going to show me action, starting by going to a meeting right now. So I did. I went to a AA meeting, and the topic of the meeting was, God can be whatever you want him to be, whatever you need him to be, the light bulb, the doorpost. I remember they called on me because I was a newcomer, and they asked me if I'd like to share. And I said, if you're telling me that the only way I'm going to stay sober is by creating a God, I'm going to walk out of these doors and I'm going to die. I've had that God and it doesn't work. The meeting ended and I was approached by this man and his wife, and they said, hey, we have an open meeting on Wednesdays. We own a men's sober living, but on Wednesdays it's open to everyone, and we would love to pick you up and bring you. And I wish I could say I was so desperate for a different life that I just jumped on that chance. But really, I heard that there would be cute boys and they would probably have problems and tattoos. And I said, sign me up. I will be there. I went, they came, they picked me up. I went to this open group on Wednesday and it was a Bible study. And again, I wish I could say that's where my testimony ends. I found the Lord and that's it, but that is not true. I kept going back for the boys. Then I found out I had warrants out for my arrest. So I went back to New Mexico and they put me in jail. And now in jail, you have like a small amount of space. And it becomes very sacred to you because you have to keep up with a lot of stuff. You have to keep up with commissary, your letters, your court documents. And so it just becomes very like cramped. And the girl I was sharing my cell with, she said to me, here, you want this? And I looked at her like, no, I really don't. I've got a limited amount of space. And it was a Bible, and I was like, keep your junk to yourself. Like, I'm just trying to survive here. But she was bigger than me and scarier than me, so I took the Bible. I woke up every day after that at 5 o'clock in the morning, every day. Nobody is awake in jail at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm telling you the truth. What am I gonna do? So I got out my Bible. Opened it to the book of Job. That is not somewhere you send a new believer. You know what I'm saying? In fact, you don't even send like anybody to the book of Job, really. The book of Job. And I started reading about this man who didn't deserve what had happened to him. But for the first time, I saw behind the scenes. I saw an enemy, and I saw a proud father who had his wallet out saying, this one's mine. And I liked his story better than mine. And then he was blessed 10 times. He didn't get back what he lost, but he was blessed 10 times, and I wanted to know what that looked like. So I kept reading, and I read about the Son of God and how he came for people like me, how he befriended people like me. And I read up to where he was going to be crucified, and he prayed a prayer that was so familiar to me. Take this cup. And I read about how he died. But I also read that he did not stay dead. And I gave my life right there to Jesus. And I was bawling. And that is a no-no in prison. You know what I'm saying? You don't do that. But not one person said anything to me. When I got out of jail, as I was leaving, I talked to the warden and I said, sir, can I take this Bible with me? He said, no, ma'am, that is property of Eddy County Detention Center. And what's Eddy County's detention centers stays here. I'm sorry. And I looked at him and I said, I think this Bible just changed my life. And he thought a second, and he said, well, maybe we can make an exception. And so I bring it with me every time I give my testimony, because I think it's such an example of what's meant to stay in jail forever can be broken free. It's well-loved. There's some duct tape on it. It's been chewed by a dog or two. It's stamped Eddy County Detention Center, and I love it. I got out of jail and instantly I knew I wanted to be baptized. I wanted to get in that water. I got baptized and I remember one of the first thoughts I had was maybe I can go to Walmart and not steal from it. Like, that was Like, I had arrived. Like, realistically, like, I just wanted to be decent. I just wanted to be just, you know, mediocre. That was the miracle for me. And I remember going into Walmart and not robbing it and being like, what else can I do with the Lord by my side? You know? I started cleaning up my mouth and dressing better, building some confidence. And then I thought, maybe I can heal from my past. So I got a sponsor and I started working what they call a four-step. And my sponsor made me write a list of everybody I had hurt. And she made me write a list of everyone who had hurt me. And she said, we talked about all the people I had hurt, and she said, Michelle, I want you to take this week. I want you to pray for them. I want you to pray for you. Pray repentance. And that week, I learned how to pray. I learned how to draw close to the Lord. It was amazing. And on the second week, we talked about everyone who had hurt me. And it was the first and last time I have ever gone into detail about what has happened to me. And at the end, I'll never forget what she said. She said, Michelle, I want you to pray for them. I never wanted to punch someone so hard in my life. I felt so betrayed. Did you not hear the horrifying things I told you? And seeing how hurt I was on my face, she said, Michelle, what did this week look like praying for you? And I said, I prayed that I would be forgiven, that I would be changed, that I could help other people. And she said, Michelle, pray that for them. Pray that they would be repentant, that they could be changed, and they could make it to where no girl would ever have to go through what you went through. And I did. And I was free. It was not mine anymore. And the same God that could change me could change them. And he could do all things. It was amazing. And I was free. And I went on to do amazing things. I got my GED. I got a job. I became a mentor. And then I got back together with my boyfriend, who's now my husband. I got back together with my boyfriend, and we decided we were going to honor God with our relationship. And despite our desire to do that, I ended up pregnant. And I was so ashamed, and I was so scared. So I turned to my mentors before I even talked to him, and I got told, Michelle, you can't be a mom. You really need to consider abortion. You really need to consider adoption. But I wanted him. And I got on the bus, and this man I had befriended, who was paralyzed from the neck down since he was 12, he said, how are you? And I said, I'm pregnant. I just word vomit. And he said, you are gonna make a great mom. And it gave me enough courage to look up to God and say, if you will forgive me and you will give me wisdom to be a mom, I will raise him to know you. One of the biggest gifts to my testimony came when my son was in kindergarten. He came home and he said, Mom, I have a gift for you. And I grinning ear to ear. And I said, what is it, buddy? And he said, here. So I opened it. And it says, my mom is special because she teaches me about Jesus. And I dropped to my knees because in that moment, God took me back to that road when I begged him to take my life, and he said, I saw you now then. And I was saying, don't you know who you are to me? Don't you know the mama I love yous? the amazing husband I have for you. When Ernest told me I'd be speaking as a kickoff to missions, I thought, oh, that's an intimidating word, missions, because I think like the jungles of Africa or like somewhere scary, like where there's small food portions, you know? And so, you discredit it, but missions is something so much more. It is making sure that there is a Bible in every jail cell. It is a ride to a Bible study. And so it is my hope as a church this month, we will bombard Ernest with "Here I am, send me." But more importantly than that, today, if you are on a jumping off point and you don't know who God says you are, don't leave here unsure. There's a mess of us here who would love to tell you just who you are to God and what He has done for you. Thank y'all for letting me speak.